Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you why Richard Sherman won't be the player he used to be, and why Eli Manning has had a better career than Big Ben. Speak for Yourself starts now. Ow! Thursday, day before Friday, 2 days before Saturday. Can't wait. All right, hello and welcome. Cal Herd is off today, so I'm joined by the NFL Network's Bucky Brooks and the founder of The Big Lead, Jason McIntyre. Let's start in college football, where Ohio State announced that it is suspending Coach Urban Meyer and Athletic Director Gene Smith over their involvement in mishandling allegations of domestic violence against former assistant coach Zach Smith. Meyer will miss 3 games and address the suspension and his behavior in a press conference yesterday.
I'm fully aware that I'm ultimately responsible for the situation that has harmed the university as a whole and our Department of Athletics and our football program. I want to apologize to Buckeye Nation. I followed my heart, not my head. I fell short in pursuing full information because at each juncture, I gave Zach Smith the benefit of the doubt. I did a poor job at Media Day. It's a big reason why we're here today. I was not being as complete and as accurate as I should have been at Media Day and afterward. But there is no intent to mislead. My role is to set a good example. In this instant, I did not live up to the university's standards. The suspensions are tough, but I fully accept them. I wish I could go back and make the different decisions, but I can't.
Well, what about Shelley's text messages? Why were you not concerned from her messages about this situation?
I was not aware of Shelley's text messages at the time.
What message do you have for Courtney Smith?
Well, I have a message for everyone involved in this. I'm sorry that we're in this situation. And I'm just sorry we're in this situation.
All right, we're going to get into the tone that Urban Meyer, Gene Smith took yesterday at the press conference in a second. But I just want to first start with the 3-game suspension. I've been following people's reaction over social media and across the internet. I think the 3-game suspension is significant. I think that it's a real deterrent and real punishment. I think the suspension without pay for both of these guys, Gene Smith and Urban Meyer, are real and significant. I think Ohio State punished these guys. I don't think Ohio State punished them with a full belief that these guys were totally wrong. And so I don't have a problem with the 3-game suspension. I think it was harsh. I think it was firm. I think the people that are criticizing and saying Urban Meyer should be fired maybe have gone a bit too far. But first of all, I want you guys' reaction to the 3-game suspension.
I kind of expected somewhere in the lines of a 4-game suspension, worst case a year. At no instance did I think that he would be fired. He's too valuable to the program. They've done too much stuff in terms of winning and making their place at the top of the college football landscape. I just know that Ohio State relishes the fact that they're a dominant team in the Big Ten. They don't want to lose the leader of their program. So giving him a suspension would serve, I guess, some of those people well, but it will allow them to retain the leader of their program, which is what they wanted to do.
I don't know. I see 3 games, and it feels like a slap on the wrist. You know, it feels like, hey, this is a situation where Urban Meyer, when presented with the information, the first thing he went to do was, oh, how do I delete old text messages on my phone? You know, and the next thing he does is Urban Meyer's out here. I have a memory loss. I can't really remember everything. To me, that's a guy who's guilty of something. He's looking to get out of this. So I would have gone all or nothing. I would have gone, let's just get rid of Urban Meyer. Let's put a stand on it and say, you know what? We're an institution of higher learning. We care about trust and integrity. That stuff matters to us. And sorry, Urban, you're gone. Or I would have said, hey, you know what? We're not going to suspend you at all. We don't think you did anything wrong, which is kind of what they're saying, right?
No. Yes and no. Okay. Again, the 3-game suspension provides some cover for Urban Meyer. If they don't suspend him at all hell breaks loose across the media in Ohio, and the witch hunt amps up even more. And so I expected Gene Smith to be offered up. That was my narrative from the word go, is that they were going to blame it on Gene Smith and Urban Meyer would survive. And so, again, that's why I go back. The 3-game suspension, I think, is significant. I don't think it's a slap on the wrist. Urban Meyer does not remotely look like a person who's been slapped on the wrist, Urban Meyer, whether rightly or wrongly, feels like he's a victim here. the way he carried himself in that press conference screamed that I'm a victim. And so I get we'll go here a little bit earlier than I anticipated, but I just think that Urban Meyer, Ohio State, Gene Smith, the president, the board of trustees, their actions all scream to me is we have information that makes us believe that Urban Meyer's not the real bad guy here. But we don't trust the media enough to put that information out there. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame them for that. And I know I'll be vilified and ridiculed for saying that, but having been a part of the media since 1990, having been covered by the media over the last two decades, the media is not interested in the truth. Mm-hmm. The media is not interested in context. The media is interested in hanging people. And so I can just talk about the stuff that has gone on in my life, and I don't want this to seem like it's a personal thing, because I've seen it happen with too many people across the board. Context and the full story is irrelevant. It's just who can we hang? And I think what we've seen from Ohio State this time, what we saw from Michigan State last basketball season when the media was out for Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio, Michigan State and Ohio State just said, you know what, we're going to wait the witch hunt and the mob mentality out, and we think we can survive this. And I think you're going to see more institutions and more leaders take that approach. Rather than give in to the social media lynch mob, they're going to say, you know what, we'll wait it out.
And I think that is something that's very, very valid, because when you look at this situation, if you dump Urban Meyer, then what? Does it go away? It just goes to the mob goes to the next story. I think in Ohio State's case, they had to do something to punish Urban Meyer, let everyone know that the allegations and all the stuff that took place was very, very serious. But they also have to keep their house in order and make sure that, look, football is big business. They're in the business of winning games, and they want to put themselves in the best situation to win. So even worst case, if they suspended him for a year, you cannot let one of the best football coaches in college football walk away. They're not going to let him walk out the door. I think Ohio State kind of served two masters with this. They made sure that the house is in order, but they also let everyone know they're sending a message to Urban Meyer. He has to act the right way.
A couple things. You mentioned Gene Smith, right? This guy survived the Jim Tressel scandal, and now he's going to survive the Urban Meyer. I mean, he's bulletproof. Nobody can touch Gene Smith. but I want to go back to the word trust. And I got to ask you guys. Urban Meyer comes in. Bucky, you got young kids. Urban Meyer comes into your living room. Selling, we need you on the Ohio State, you know, football team. We love you. Do you trust Urban Meyer, given this is a guy who in 2009, when his position coach allegedly had an incident with his wife, the cops were called, no arrest. Urban Meyer knew about that, okay? He didn't tell Ohio State when he brought this guy in. He didn't tell them about that. And then in 2015, the position coach, again, an incident with the wife. No charges or anything, but Urban knew about that. He buried that here. Do you trust him going into your locker room? Can you trust him to mold your 17, 18-year-old into a young man?
I think here's the debate. I don't look at football coaches as, quote-unquote, father figures. I think as much as we would like that to happen, I don't believe that is where we are right now. Maybe back in the day, that's the approach. But right now, it's a football factor. It's about them winning games. I don't think they're all the way in it to develop young people. So when it came to...
I'm going to disagree. Urban Meyer would be very upset if someone were saying he's not interested in molding men. Now, he is most interested in winning football games. But I don't think Urban Meyer reacted in any of these moments any different than most fathers would. And maybe that's the failure of men. But, Jason, when you talk about an incident where you said police were called, no charges were met, and so the police come in and investigate and say, no charge. Perhaps
something
the police...
Something happened, we don't know. Yeah.
Something happened, we don't know. Are you telling me that happened in 2009? No charges. That's an incident between Zach Smith and his wife, Courtney Smith, that years later when you're at Ohio State, when you hire him, no charges. It makes, to some degree, sense that he didn't tell them. And again, I understand the environment we're in, but husbands and wives have incidents. And not all of them can be mediated by the boss.
Totally true. Yeah.
And so, again, when I watch, and we were talking about yesterday and the tone they took, and this, Urban clearly has no sympathy for Courtney Smith. That's the only thing we can say. And so we can believe that he's just a monster of a man with no heart. Or there's the other possibility, he believes something else that we don't believe. Yeah, no. He believes that perhaps Zach Smith is somewhat of a victim here. And he may be wrong in that belief, but that's what he believes. And I'm not sure there are thousands of other men or other football coaches or whatever that would handle all these situations of the limited information we know differently than Urban Meyer.
That's great points. I will say that the police were called many times to that house. There were a lot of incidents, and again, no charges filed. And she never went the distance. But if you guys do the history, like that kind of happens in these domestic violence incidents. At some point, you got to take a stand. We don't know what happened, so I'm not.
There's no question. But right. I'm speculating on Urban Meyer's beliefs and thoughts. But I'll just say this: more than Ohio State, I'm wondering about her family and how did they handle any and all of this?
A lot of.
Because if that were my child, I don't know if I would be looking for Urban Meyer to fix a problem with my grown adult child. I would be trying to do that. And so, I'll just say this. I think Ohio State has taken firm, clear, harsh punishment, placed that on Urban Meyer, has put a bullseye on his back. We know if there's another incident, we know he's done. They've taken action. And reluctantly, because I think all the reporting says the board of trustees didn't really want to take action. The president stepped in here. And so the group of people that have far more information than the media, whether people want to believe that or not, far more information than even Brett McMurphy, who's heard from Courtney Smith primarily. He's heard one side of the story from one person. The group that's looked at all of it basically didn't want to do anything. The president clearly smartly stepped in here and said, we got to do something or we're all going to get destroyed.
We're taking a PR hit. The other thing, Jason, we didn't even talk about this. So Urban Meyer meets the media yesterday, right? And he's reading from a prepared statement like a robot. Okay, yeah. No empathy whatsoever. And the best part is for Ohio State, they waited for that whole thing to be done, waited for the questions, then they handed out the 23-page report that talked about the deleted text messages and the incidents, that were like, whoa, this deserves some follow-up questions. So Ohio State really, I thought they kind of protected Urban Meyer, who we both agree came off awful yesterday. I mean, this was a PR disaster.
Yeah, he did come off awful. He hasn't handled the situation right in many aspects, particularly when it came to dealing with the press. First at Big Ten Media Day, then having the follow-up press conference yesterday. He could have been forthright. He could have been more empathetic and sympathetic to the victim. But he is a coach. He is what he is. I don't think that we could expect him to kind of wax poetic on these issues based on how he acted.
Name or something. I mean, he didn't even mention it by name.
Here's what I would say, though. As a person in the media, I would rather him be real than put on a show. If that's not how he feels, the fact that he let it out, I don't feel that way. I'm glad he did it. That's a level of transparency that we can now judge him on. You can call it awful, or you could sit back and say, I don't know all that transpired here. And maybe there's something motivating, and maybe it's just arrogance that's motivating.
Or he's protecting the school from a potential lawsuit from Courtney.
Potential lawsuit. That could happen. I can see them not wanting to go down that road. I just think we're judging Urban Meyer on how he dealt with the media at Media Day, and I don't think we in the media ever sit back and evaluate ourselves. Are we doing things that are causing sources to have zero faith in us? Is this clickbait level of journalism we're doing, making sources and newsmakers totally afraid of us, totally afraid to divulge any information to us because we will turn it into clickbait, we will use it to destroy people rather than try to explain and understand people? Some of this is on us, and we can demonize Urban Meyer and all these other people that criticize the media, but some of it is on us. I've been in this since 1990. the level of journalism we're doing today is embarrassing and it's destructive of people. And sometimes people make tiny mistakes and we turn it into mistakes where they must be destroyed. That scares people and makes them lie to you, makes them not trust you. And so Urban Meyer, again, he's faced some penalties here. 3 games, he's been embarrassed, he's been had his reputation besmirched. We in the media, we're in total denial about our role in the things that we're doing improperly. So, Urban Meyer, I hope you've learned a lesson. I hope we have too in the media.
Hey guys, Jason McIntyre here. Before the show moves along, I wanted to tell you that support for the Speak for Yourself podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/speak. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
All right, welcome back. Bucky Brooks is back. We're joined now by Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson and USA Today's Jared Bell. Let's move to the NFL, where Thursday night football kicks off tonight as the Browns host the Eagles. Catch it all on Fox. Hugh Jackson just said on Hard Knocks that this team could have the greatest turnaround in sports history. But they're not the only bottom dweller from last year looking to make a big leap, with the Jets going all in on Sam Darnold and reportedly reaching out to the Raiders about a trade for Khalil Mack. All right, I'm going to shock everyone here. The Jets won 5 games last year. The Browns won 0 games last year. I think the Jets will have a bigger turnaround improvement than the Browns. I think the Jets will have a 4 to 5 to 6 game improvement. And I think the best the Browns can do is win 4 games.
Four games?
The best the Browns can do is win 4 games.
Wow.
I think the Jets with Sam Darnold, with the potential of trying to, just going out talking about getting Khalil Mack speaks to me. They think they're in win now mode. They're going all in. Whereas I look at the Browns, I think they got a tough road to hoe.
I think the Browns are going to be fine. I think the Browns are going to compete for the second spot in that division. I feel like the division's kind of coming back to them. But when you look at what happened to them last year.
They won 0 games, Buck.
But that was last year. It's brand new year.
Thank you.
Brand new year.
Zero,
brand new quarterback.
Who goes from zero to competing?
I don't know. But I saw the Rams become very relevant a year ago. And look, you're in Kansas City. Marty Schottenheim tells you, you got to take care of the ball. Tyrod Taylor gives them an opportunity to take care of the ball. Last year, they lost 6 games by 7 points or fewer. They had 34 giveaways at the quarterback position. Since 2015, Tyrod only has 21 giveaways. Before you can win games, you got to stop beating yourself. Tyrod is going to help them by not turning the ball over. He ended the drought in Buffalo. Cleveland is next.
Yeah, let me make a point on this, too, because when you say the Jets, you know, I was feeling you on the Jets are going to be improved, et cetera, et cetera. But when you say 4 to 5 game improvement off of winning five games last year, we're talking double digits and playoffs and all of that for the Jets.
I think Todd Bowles has done this with the Jets already once. When he took over from Rex, they had a 6 game improvement.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that they're going to double this year. And the Browns, in order for them to be more improved than the Jets, that means win, what,
three, four games,
right? And I like what Cleveland's done in terms of assembling that talent and having some supporting pieces around Tyrod Taylor. I think that's really the key, bottom line key. You're talking about a rookie quarterback who we don't know much about in terms of how that adjustment's going to go versus a quarterback who was in the playoffs last year with the Buffalo Bills.
Well, you got two rookie quarterbacks, possibly. I don't know who's is either going to start, but Sam Darnold, to me, I mean, as a young quarterback, he didn't have a lot of college experience. One thing that he does is turn the football over. So if you're going to start Sam Darnold, I mean, and you play in the Patriots twice, I mean, things are a lot faster than the pros is in college. I was at the Ohio State game when they played Ohio State, I think in the Cotton Bowl. And Sam Darnold and the USC Trojans, especially Sam Darnold, looked like he was a deer in headlights. Like, this is fast. Now, imagine how fast it is in the National Football League. Let's go to the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland has a lot of weapons. I mean, you just said that the Jets have a chance because they're talking about getting Khalil Mack. Talking about it.
Right attitude, Eric.
Right attitude. But they're talking about getting it. What is that going to add? Talking about, you know, the Jets, I mean, the Browns, they have Jarvis Landry. If they can keep Josh Gordon, you know, off the weed, I mean, they have a lot of weapons over there. Look at, and I like Baker Mayfield. One thing about Baker is, you know, I like his it factor, he has that confidence. Just like when he's at Oklahoma, he was that kind of player that made you like, look,
Eric,
we're the Sooners.
Not been listening to you. They're starting Tyrod Taylor.
I still like Baker Mayfield, but I don't get the Khalil Mack thing that they're talking about. It make me get that one. How do you get that? That's gonna make him win games.
It speaks to an attitude that they have with that franchise that I don't think they have with the Cleveland Browns. Look, Todd Bowles needs to win this year.
So does Hugh Jackson.
I understand. I understand. Todd Bowles, to me, has proven he can win. Hugh Jackson has not done that yet. I expect there to be a little dysfunction there. I don't think the QB thing is settled by any stretch. I get that Hugh wants to go with Tyrod, but they spent a number one draft pick on Baker Mayfield. At some point, they're going to want the rookie quarterback out there. And we're talking about the Cleveland Browns. They've won one game out of their last 32, and y'all sitting here thinking they can win the AFC North or even second place. That seems crazy to me.
I think they can get in there. John Dorsey will – look, they can keep Baker on the sideline this year. They did a year ago in Kansas City with Pat Mahomes. Pat Mahomes was a big-time pick, top 10 pick. They didn't put him on the field.
Alex Smith.
Well, I'm not saying he's Alex Smith, but I am saying he's a playoff quarterback. He can get you to the playoffs. That team in Buffalo didn't have a lot of weapons. He found a way to win games. He is a nice leader. He takes care of the ball, and the weapons they have around him are enough for him to play winning football. I think the Browns are going to win, and they're going to win far more than we're giving them credit for.
And Jason, you talk about attitude. I mean, what speaks more to an attitude, an optimistic attitude, than a coach who has won one game in 2 years, boldly predicting that, hey, we are going to have the biggest turnaround in NFL history. That's attitude.
Boldly is one way to say that. Crazily is another way. All right, welcome back. Eric Dickerson, Bucky Brooks are back. We're joined now by former Pro Bowl receiver T.J. Houshmandzadeh. Let's return to the NFL, where Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack are both still holding out for big contracts, but they're not the only defensive stars who have yet to get paid this summer. Up in Seattle, Earl Thomas is still waiting for the Seahawks to pony up for a new deal, and his teammate Bobby Wagner says he understands why Thomas and other defensive stars are holding out, saying, quote, "Every year they're making the game harder and harder for a defensive player to play. I just think that defensive players are just as important as offensive players. If you don't have a defense, this league doesn't exist. So I feel like defensive players do need to kind of stand their ground just to show, like, we're just as important." We talked about this yesterday, and I agree with Bobby Wagner. We've reached a point now where defensive players don't seem to have the same value as offensive players, even though they play half the game, even though we know defense wins championships. I think the league is headed the arena football direction where all we know are the offensive stars, the quarterbacks and the receivers, and everybody else is irrelevant. If I'm Bobby Wagner or any of these defensive players and guys that have made a lot of money in this league playing defense, I would be concerned. I would be concerned about the direction of the league and is our position still valued? Defensive players are every bit as important as offensive players.
In yesterday's game, old school football they are, not today. Right now it's about the three Ps, passers, playmakers, and pass catchers. On offense, you have to be able to score points. We have seen teams like the New England Patriots get to the Super Bowl repeatedly with a great quarterback, an average defense that can play situational football and win games. Teams are no longer investing big money in defensive stars because they know you can outscore people and win significant games. We had three of the top four defensive teams in the playoffs last year, and each one of those teams got shredded when they faced a high-powered offense. We saw Philly destroy Minnesota. We saw Philly have a tough time slowing down New England and vice versa. It is about the offense. It's putting points up. And even though I don't like it looking like arena football, that is what the NFL is going to, because follow the money, that's what they're paying people.
You look at football. Take the quarterback out of it. Who decides to play a player in the NFL? Take the quarterbacks out of it. It's Von Miller. So somebody on defense is getting paid. They think
a couple of years ago.
I mean, but if you take the quarterbacks out of it, the highest paid player in the NFL is Von Miller. Everybody wants to see points. You go to the NBA. Do they pay Bruce Bowen a max contract because he's a great defensive player? Man, they want to see points scored in every sport. Mike Trout or Andrelton Simmons. Andrelton Simmons is a great player, but Mike Trout hits the ball. Everybody wants to see offensive production. That's just the way it is. I see where Bobby Wagner is coming from. When there's a Richard Sherman in his prime and a Del Revis in his prime, Jalen Ramsey, when he comes up, he's going to get paid because he's that good.
Okay.
Simple as that. They want points.
Since you said that, think about the Super Bowl. You had Case Keenum with the Vikings. You had Nick Foles with the Eagles, and you had Blake Bortles with Jacksonville. What did they have? What all those teams have? Great defense. The Eagles are very deep. So you got to have those defensive players. You go back to the 2000, the 80s, Jim McMahon, Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, Joe Flacco. I mean, what they had great defenses. You've got to have and I'm an offensive player, but you've got to have those defensive guys. I mean, you look at this year, I think general managers, they feel like the most important guy on the field is the quarterback. But right behind that is the defensive back. Look who got drafted. It was 48 defensive backs that got drafted in the NFL draft this year. So that goes to show that the defenses, they're important. It's that they don't want to pay them. That's what it comes down to. They know the importance of a great defensive player. Aaron Donald. If Aaron Donald's the most important guy on that football team, bar none, the quarterback, whatever, he controls that defense. Without Aaron Donald, we're not the same Los Angeles Rams. You can say it. That is why we went out and got Ndamukong Suh, to put him with Aaron Donald. But you've got to pay these guys. And I agree with Bobby Wagner. You've got to have defensive players. And they're important.
They are important, but you don't have to pay them.
You got to pay
them. You don't have to pay them. Right now, just follow the money in the offseason. If TJ was playing right now, TJ's going to make 12, 13, 14
Man,
million
annually.
And I was
born 10 years too soon.
But right they don't want to pay the running backs, though.
No, they're paying the running backs too. Now, think about it. Todd Gurley, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell. The difference is you have to be able to impact the passing game. Why? Because it's about the quarterback. Teams are building their teams around the quarterback. And so I like defensive guys. I believe you got to play good defense to win. But they're not paying defensive guys because they can't impact the game like guys that can put points on the
If you have a great defense, they impact. The Chicago Bears defense, the Ravens defense, they impacted
games.
It's a different game now.
It is a different game.
But, and you know, this year's Super Bowl notwithstanding, because that was an offensive show. And it's amazing to sit here and think that Bill Belichick, probably the greatest defensive coordinator ever, is leading a franchise that doesn't care about defense anymore, or certainly isn't throwing out the great defenses like he was earlier. So, look, Eric, I agree with Bobby Wagner. Defensive players are important, but it is clearly shown the league doesn't agree with us, particularly when it comes down to who they're paying. I look at that safety for the Bengals. Started 5 straight years, was seen as this great, promising player. They cut him. And he just signed a deal for $790,000, the minimum.
Yeah.
And I look at Eric Reed running around, I'm not going to accept $890,000 from the 49ers. You're a safety. The value in that position has gone out. It ain't about you taking a knee. It's about they're just not paying defensive guys. I think the rules need to be flexed in a way and figured out in a way. We have to let defensive players back in this game. in a way we're taking away everything. I think they need to liberalize the rules for defensive backs, let them touch the receivers down the field.
No
they
got
to do something.
They should bump them off the line of scrimmage.
That
would show if you're a real receiver. Can you get off the line of scrimmage? If you can't get off the line of scrimmage, you can't get the ball.
They do that now.
Jam them all the way down the field.
Need to do that.
All right.
Hey, it'll be fights every day in practice.
Richard Sherman, who is set to make his 49ers debut on Saturday against the Colts. Sherman hasn't played since tearing his Achilles last November, but the 30-year-old former All-Pro said yesterday he's not worried about returning from injury. Listen, he's done. He was done last year before he tore his Achilles.
Wow.
And you know how I know? He's running his mouth. It's not about the play on the field. He started some fantasy football company or website or whatever. Richard Sherman's done being an elite player. Look, you remember when Jerry Rice, his corn rolls started getting further and further back? Look at Richard Sherman.
Like Steve Wynn?
Look how old he looks right there with that hair and the hairline just moving further and further back. Richard Sherman's done.
Oh, man. I won't say he's done. This is what I will say. Richard Sherman has never been a guy that had great athleticism. He was a guy that was a high IQ player. And I think because he's a high IQ player, he can mask some of his athletic deficiencies by playing the right way. Some of the videos that went viral, Marquise Goodwin and some of the guys running past him, he is trying to figure out what he can and what he can't do. And I think he's going to play the game the right way. Will he play at a Jalen Ramsey level? No, those days are done. But he can be a high-level player for a defense that puts him in a situation to make plays.
I think that Richard Sherman, I don't say he's done, but his better years are behind him.
He
knows how to be a leader. He knows how to win. He played on one of the great.
He won't be a starter by midseason, Eric.
Can I finish?
Wow.
Go ahead. Okay.
I think he shows a young football team how to win. And you're right. He never was that guy that was fast. He never was a Darrell Revis or a Deion Sanders, like shut down one side of the field. He was smart. He's like a Marcus Peters. Peters is not the fastest guy, but he knows how to get to that ball. And that's the thing that Richard Sherman brings to the 49ers.
Won't be starting by midseason.
He will start the entire. Until he shows me that he can't do it, I'm rolling with him. Number one, he's 30 years old. We talking like he's 36, 37
Did
years
you see
old.
The hairline?
That's all right.
That's 45.
That's all right. The man
Let me see a birth certificate.
The man is 30 years old. See, what people don't realize, his belief in himself is going to carry him a long way. He has that unfiltered belief that he's going to win every battle he's in, and that's going to take him along. He's always played to his help. When he was in Seattle, they played single high. He would always shade outside to force the receiver inside because he had safety help. He's no different here. He's going to play to his help. He's going to be smart. He's going to recognize formations from his film study and anticipate certain routes. He's always been that way. He will start the entire year. As you get to 30, 31, 32, is going to be as good as you were when you were 23, 24. But is he going to fall off a cliff? Absolutely not. No.
He can't run anymore.
Because you watching him take a rep against a guy that was on an Olympic team. Everybody going to look like they can't run going against him.
The man's coming off a torn Achilles. His speed was never his strength.
And it never will be.
And Listen, man, you can talk and talk and talk and talk yourself into, you know, every day I talk myself into bling. When I get out, I'm Denzel Washington. By the end of the day, you know, I'm Reuben Studdard. and that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen to Richard Sherman. He can get up and think that he's 25 again, but as soon as he takes that helmet off and looks like, damn, what happened to my hair? He's 40, he's done. All right, welcome back. T.J. Houshmandzadeh, Bucky Brooks, and Jared Bell are back. Let's move to New York, where Eli Manning may be coming off one of his worst seasons, but new Giants coach Pat Shurmur still thinks the sky's the limit, saying he wants Eli to complete 70% of his passes this year. And he's not the only aging quarterback looking for a big year, with Big Ben reportedly in the best shape of his life and saying his arm is stronger than ever. Most people seem to think Ben has had the better career, but if you look at the numbers, it's actually a little bit closer than you'd think with Eli actually topping Ben in Super Bowl MVPs, yards, and touchdowns. Big Ben is my favorite player, has been since he joined the league, put on number 7, and reminded me of John Elway. It pains me to say this, but I think Eli's 2 Super Bowl victories and being the MVP in those Super Bowls and knocking off the Patriots, I think that gives the edge to Eli as having had a better career than Big Ben.
I mean, I kind of agree with you, because if we judge quarterbacks on rings, and ultimately he has played at a higher level when he's had opportunities in Super Bowls than Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger has played with teams that typically had the number 1 or number 2 defense for most of his career during this heyday. And so he's a terrific player. He's done a great job leading this offense. But Eli Manning in big games, to me, is a better player than Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree to a degree. Because, yeah, Super Bowls, that's kind of the bottom line, the definition. But what Ben gives you is more consistency. You know, if Eli gets to the playoffs, don't bet against him, right? He can go and win it all. But Ben is more likely going to get you to the playoffs. And this year, he'll be calling his own plays. He'll have more control of the offense. He's the guy who could, you know, extend plays, can do things off script that can make the offense go where Eli is not always able to do that. So the consistency is the factor for Ben Roethlisberger, notwithstanding that 5 interception game against Jacksonville last year.
You look at it, Eli's been reliable. He's very durable, hasn't missed a start. That, from that perspective, that's the only thing he has been in. He's thrown 54 more interceptions. They got drafted the same year. 54 more interceptions. That's 4 years worth of football pretty much on average. Maybe 5 if you're protecting the ball like Aaron Rodgers. Big Ben has completed 64% of his passes, Eli at 59%. They both have had really good defensive talent at times and so-so at times. Eli Manning has better success against the Patriots just because of when he's had those defensive ends that can really rush the passer, and it affects Tom Brady. Whereas when you play the Steelers, they play that 3-4 defense. If you can get them to sub out and go to that 4-3 down lineman and get out of the 3-4, it hurts them because they're not as strong. They're not as strong when they go 4 down lineman. They have to take one of those backers out of the game. And that's how the Patriots approach it. They force them to get out of that 3-4 defense into a 4 down line look. And now you can't come with these exotic blitzes. That's why she struggled against the Patriots. It's a team game. Eli won a Super Bowl.
2 Super Bowls against the Patriots.
That catch that David Tyree made, everybody,
Eli made the throw.
Really?
Yeah.
I could have made that throw.
He shook off the scramble.
The catch is 99% Tyree, 1% Eli.
It is.
The throw is a big deal.
The throw was big, and the scramble to set up the throw
was
big.
When the last time you seen anybody make that type of catch? Never. Right. That's why it never happens. That's why it's 90%, 99% David Tyree. I'm not discrediting Eli. Offensively, throwing the ball, the touchdowns is there. But when you talk about 54 more interceptions, that's a ton. That's a lot.
It is a lot, and I do think the statistics tend to favor Big Ben. My issue with Big Ben, his first Super Bowl, he got carried to.
He did.
He got carried to. So he's got 1 Super Bowl where he can say, look, I give him credit for both of them. But Eli, integral, both of their Super Bowl runs, great Super Bowl performances. I just think for Big Ben, he needed a 3rd Super Bowl ring to me to really elevate himself. And I always thought, and this year, next year, when he needs a 3rd Super Bowl ring, and then this is all put to bed, and now you can start talking about Big Ben and arguing him with some of the other super elite quarterbacks. But right now, I think he and Eli are neck and neck, and if somebody wanted to argue Eli, I got no objection. To Dallas, where Jerry Jones says Dak Prescott won't take the field again until the regular season, after 2 of the Cowboys' best offensive linemen, Zach Martin and Travis Frederick, went down with ailments that will keep them out the rest of the preseason. I think this is a mistake. I've watched both of Dak's preseason games and preseason performances, and he's completed 1 pass down the field during the preseason. It was a lovely 30-yard strike down the sidelines for a touchdown, and it was great. Every other throw he's made downfield has been inaccurate. And it hasn't been because of pass rush pressure. Dak's been on the move on a few of these throws, and he's just been off. Everything has been underneath. Dak, I think, needs more work in the preseason. I don't think they've established anything about passing the ball down the field. I want to see that from Dak. His five incompletions are all throws down the field where he's been inaccurate and off. I think Dak still needs some work.
Yeah, but we're talking risk versus reward. Mm-hmm. Am I right? We're talking about an offensive line that is missing two players at the moment, Zach Martin and Travis Frederick, and we'll probably be down one depending on how long Frederick is there, and they think Martin's going to come back. So, yes, you want him to get his reps. You know you're not going to play Ezekiel Elliott during the rest of the preseason. You may as well just try to protect Dak, keep him upright, and fix your offensive line as well as you can to get ready for the regular season.
I think this is really a non-issue. I think Dak Prescott has had enough work. I thought he's been pretty solid in what they want him to do. And this offense is changing before our eyes. This offense is going to look a little more Patriot-like in terms of how he approaches the game from the pocket. A lot of dink and dunk, a lot of singles, some doubles. But he won't take many shots for home runs. One, they don't have the personnel to do it. Two, the Dallas Cowboys want to play ball control football. They want to run the ball with Zeke. They want to spread you out in empty formations and just work Cole Beasley and some of their underneath guys and just move the chains. When they did that a couple years ago, it allowed them to win the division. I think they believe that's the best way for them to play with Dak at quarterback.
They're making a mistake by not at least giving him the first quarter of this third game. The last game, he should not be in the game at all. Guys are trying to make the team at that point. He should not play. But, you know, Jerry Jones, and basically he's saying our backup offensive line are terrible. I don't want Dak Prescott in the game getting his head busted in. That's what he's saying. Zach Martin and Travis Frederick can't play. We don't trust the guys that are coming in there, so I'm not going to put my quarterback in there because I don't want him hurt and I don't have confidence in my backup. That's what he's saying. I don't want Dak Prescott to get hurt because I don't trust my backup and I don't trust these offensive linemen that are going to be coming into the game playing. They should at least give him a series. Just to get the game feel, the speed of the game. You go 2 weeks without playing live bullets knowing you're going to get hurt, that's tough. But he's a professional. He should be able to handle it, but I think they should give him at least a quarter.
Yeah, I don't think it's that big of a mistake. I can see both sides to it because I was out at Chargers practice this week where they had a joint session mm-hmm. with the Saints. And one of the things that Philip Rivers said was, you know, really relative to this whole conversation when he talked about what he saw in practice where they're not hitting the quarterback in the joint practice. They've got on the red jerseys. But he was able to see the disguises. The defense was flying around. Things were happening at a very quick pace, which you don't always get in practice. So there's the value for that. But you weigh that against the possibility of having, you know, another injury to say, Dak Prescott. And I don't think it's worth it.
Welcome back. Eric Dickerson is here for Last Call. Let's move to golf, where the details of Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson's head-to-head showdown are finally out, with the pay-per-view duel set for November 23rd with a $9 million payout to the winner. Eric, is this worth paying for?
Can I get $10,000? I'll say this much here. You have two iconic golfers. You got Phil Mickelson, great golfer, but the guy I think everybody wants to see make that comeback is Tiger Woods. People are going to pay for it because it's Tiger Woods, for sure. And Phil Mickelson.
Are you going to pay for it?
Absolutely not. I don't watch golf like that. I love golf, but would I pay for it? Not.
10 years ago, this would have been awesome. In 2018, I may not pay for it, and I love Tiger Woods. See you tomorrow.